I'm Bex, and welcome to the Week Junior Show. Today, I'm joined by three of the team from the Week Junior, the magazine making sense of the world for 8 to 14-year-olds. We have Hugh.
Hi.
Kay.
Hi.
And Michael.
Hello.
Now, the new issue of the Week Junior magazine is packed with everything you need to know about the most important and fascinating things happening around the planet and beyond. Inside, you'll find out about the Prime Minister's apology to the Queen, the crocodile skeleton found under a Welsh school's floorboards, and a coin that may be worth £500,000. If you want to get your hands on a copy of the Week Junior, you can get a 6-week free trial by going to dennismags.co.uk/theweekjunior and using the code podcast. So, on to this week's episode of the Week Junior Show, we'll find out about a deadly tsunami in Tonga, the fascinating history of Hadrian's Wall, and the sighting of an incredibly rare octopus. Plus, we'll have a debate about whether exams should be typed rather than written. But before all of that, given that we'll be talking about an epic Roman wall, I want to know your favourite Roman invention. Hugh, you can go first.
Well, my favourite Roman invention is fast food. I mean, despite the idea of the fine cuisine and lavish banquets, the Romans in a hurry were actually more likely to grab a burger or a takeaway like the rest of us. The Romans invented fast food takeaways. These places were called Thermopolium, which translates roughly as hot food and drink shops. They were small shops, small places on the street with marble food counters and small seating areas, actually surprisingly like the modern fast food restaurants. And they even had the equivalent of menus on the wall with paintings of the food available to buy.
Oh my goodness, Hugh, you've blown my mind with the story. So you're telling me if I was a Roman time person, or a Roman as most people call them, I could go and get a burger and sit in essentially like a fast food restaurant.
They were absolutely everywhere. Most people didn't have kitchens in their house anyway, apart from the very rich. So fast food was a big seller in ancient Rome.
Oh my goodness. Okay, this has blown my mind. Kay, can you top fast food?
I'm always amazed by roads. I recently started driving, and when I'm going around, I just think it's such a cool system.
So you're thinking Roman roads are the way forward, quite literally. All right, that's a good shout. How about you, Michael? What have you picked?
Well, given that we work for a weekly news magazine, I thought I'd go for newspapers, because kind of the idea behind newspapers began in ancient Rome. So they weren't like the newspapers we have today. Instead, there are these big sort of stone tablets which had the news carved into them, and they'd be hung up in public places for people to go and sort of find out what was going on. So that's kind of where the idea behind newspapers was born.
Well, sadly, there are no podcast examples I could find from Roman Britain, from my roots, but I did find they kind of have been credited with inventing the postal service, because they would send messengers around the Roman road system, which Kay mentioned, and they could travel about 50 miles a day. I think that's 80 kilometres, and they had like a really successful Roman postal service. So I do love getting cards and presents in the post, so that I thought was my favourite invention. I also want to know what everybody's favourite fact is from this week. Hugh, what have you learnt?
Okay, well, this is actually less a straight fact as a jaw-dropping story, but a man in the US has become the first person in the world to get a heart transplant from a pig. The pig's heart was genetically modified to make it compatible with the human, and so his body didn't reject it. So basically, they altered the genes. Genes are made up of DNA, which are the chemical instructions that are in every living cell that determine how a person or a creature will develop and grow. So, you know, your hair colour, all that kind of stuff is determined in your genes.
Nice. Kay, what have you found out?
A school in Wales has found a crocodile skeleton under the floorboards of its school hall, and they've put the reptile remains on display.
I mean, that would be quite a creepy thing to find in your school, but I like it. And Michael, how about you?
Well, there's a story in this week's magazine about a gold coin that was discovered, which had King Henry III on it. And I found out that he was 9 years old when he became king, which is crazy to me. The idea of a nine-year-old king, I definitely would not have been entrusted with that sort of power when I was 9 years old.
Oh, my goodness. I dread to think what I would have done if I'd come to power at 9 years old. Probably just making everybody give me chocolate buttons, let's face it. Now it's time for Real or Rubbish. This is when I hear a story from one of you and I have to guess whether it's true or false, real or rubbish. Michael, what story do you have for me today?
Well, Bex, you and the listeners might be familiar with the story Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, but what about Cloudy with a Chance of Soybeans? Because that is the weather conditions that were seen in Hamilton in Canada, where residents woke up one morning to find their streets, their cars covered in soya bean husks, which are the beans shell. They said it was like a snowfall of soybeans, and actually a processing factory in the city later said that they were responsible for this freak weather event. They said there'd been a malfunction and it had caused it to snow soybeans. Now, does this sound true to you, Bex, or is our forecast wrong?
So you're telling me this factory, should we say, had soybeans inside them and did something like spontaneously combust, so all the husks essentially went all around the town?
That is what they're saying, yeah.
The thing is, Michael, and I'm annoyed that I'm going to have to ask this, because you won't tell me the answer, obviously, I know what you're like, but if it turns out that this happened, but with, like, another type of bean, and that's how you've tricked me, you do know I'm going to be cross, don't you?
I do know that, yeah.
Yeah. I need to make sure you're aware that at the end of this episode, if you say, actually, it was a baked bean, I am going to be livid.
Noted.
You know. Okay, that's good. That's good. Okay, I just need to put that out there. I don't like to think this is real, but I think, I mean, things can go wrong. Factories can break. But it seems like it's the opposite of what a factory should do. It shouldn't be shooting out its debris all over the town. That's ridiculous. What happens if it hits somebody in the eye? What happens if it hits a windscreen of a car too much? It seems like they'd have to pay a lot in insurance. But, you know, how do you cover that in your insurance policy? I don't know. Anyway, this is I'm thinking about it too much now. This is going to be all I think about for the next 10 minutes. I will consider my options. If it is any other type of bean, I'm going to be cross. And if you're listening and you don't know the answer yet either, well, feel free to make your guess before the end of the show and we will find it out together a little bit later. Now it's time for our three most interesting stories from this week. Kay, what do you have for me?
It's 1,900 years since the Roman Emperor Hadrian ordered a 73-mile wall to be built across northern Britain. It's called Hadrian's Wall, and to mark the anniversary, a year-long festival has been planned. We've also got a brilliant all-about piece in this week's issue. So why was the wall built? When the Roman Emperor Trajan died in AD 117, Hadrian took over as emperor. A rebellion was brewing. Tribes in the north were resisting Roman rule. Then in AD 122, Hadrian visited the border and decided to build a wall to keep the tribes out.
So here's the thing, I'm going to be honest with you all. I'm sat in the northeast of England right now. I am literally metres away from my nearest bit of Hadrian's Wall. In fact, the village I am in right now is named after it. So I suspect I know the answer already, but for our listeners, Kay, what remains of the wall? Can you tell people a little bit about what's around at the moment?
Yeah, so over the centuries, chunks of stone have been removed. Most of Hadrian's Wall now stands at about 1.5 metres high. There's a large fort and museum called Vindolander, where visitors can see a recreation of some of the original buildings. And archaeologists, who are experts that study ancient objects to help us understand history, are still digging parts of the Vindolander site. Events are planned to bring the anniversary to life, including a bunting challenge and a light show in Carlisle.
Well, you know what, Kay? You've given me some stuff to do because I'm going to be up here for a while. So at least now I know there's some stuff going on in my local area. It is amazing, Hadrian's Wall, and it's still very much visible and walkable. And I've definitely had quite a few days out to Vindolander and Chester's. So thank you very much for telling me, if anything, just a personal service for me, Kay, to tell me what I can do in my local area. Now, Hugh, what about you? What have you been finding out about?
Okay, so there's been a very rare sighting of a female blanket octopus off the coast of Queensland in Australia. It's thought to be the fourth time the animal's been spotted in the area and one of the very few times that it's been seen anywhere in the world, in fact. So Jacinta Shackleton, who's a marine biologist, spotted it. You can actually hear her shrieking on the YouTube video with excitement, even if she is underwater. It's kind of a weird sound she makes when she sees it. So she's excited, but it seems to me quite surprising that these sightings are so rare, given how outrageously showy the blanket octopus is or are. It gets its name from the web-like sheets of colourful tissue that stretch between some of its arms. So the females spread out these beautifully coloured capes to make themselves appear larger and more threatening to scare away potential predators.
And is it only the females who have these impressive rainbow capes?
Yes, the males are very dull and tiny compared to the fast flowing females. So the blanket octopus is one of the biggest size differences in the animal kingdom. The female can grow up to around 2 meters tall, in length. So that's about the same as a very, very tall, I don't know, basketball player or something. whereas the males only reach around 2.4 centimetres, about the size of a 10p coin.
What?
You know, it can fit, exactly, it can fit inside a ping pong ball. They certainly look like they, an odd and kind of unthreatening couple, though. I mean, one's really flamboyant, the other one's tiny. But I wouldn't mess with them, because the males and the young females can pull the tentacles off dangerous jellyfish, such as Portuguese man-o-war, which they're harmful to other animals, but not to the blanket octopus. So they use them as a weapon to ward off any animal that might try to attack them.
Wow, that's amazing. I've never heard of these octopuses before. Thank you very much, Hugh. And Michael, finally, what have you been finding out about?
So there, this week there has been a tsunami in Tonga. Now, a tsunami is a long high sea wave caused by an earthquake or another large disturbance. And this tsunami was caused by an underwater volcano erupting in the southern Pacific Ocean. Tonga is made up of more than 170 islands in the Pacific. And this eruption was so loud that it could be heard kind of thousands of miles away, and even affected some other countries as well. But Tonga was the worst affected. There were waves of more than a meter high, places covered in ash as well. Up to 80,000 people in Tonga are thought to have been affected by the tsunami. And it's been hard for people to find out more information about it, because actually their phone and internet lines were cut off because of damage that was done to undersea cables as a result of the tsunami. So lots of people have been trying to find out more information and try to help, because as you can imagine, there's been lots of damage that's been done as a result of this tsunami.
Yeah, I bet. So what is being done to help?
So Australia and New Zealand have both promised more than £1 million in aid, and have also been sending ships and planes with clean water and other supplies. They're being very careful, though, because of COVID-19. Tonga, in fact, only had its first reported case of COVID-19 back in October of 2020. So they don't want there to be an outbreak of COVID-19 on top of this. So they're being very careful to make sure that these aid deliveries and the support that's being sent to the country is being done in a safe way, so they can get the supplies they need without taking any risk. But the first plane, I think, landed this morning. In fact, they had to clear ash off the runway so that planes could land with emergency supplies. But those packages now are getting to them. So hopefully they'll continue to receive more support over the coming days.
All right. Thank you very much, Michael. Now, as well as reading more about these stories in The Week Junior, you can also read all about Talking History, a fascinating and colourful graphic novel style book dedicated to amazing speeches and the people who delivered them. It's written by Joan Lennon and Joan Haig. And here they are to tell us a little bit more about themselves.
Hi there, listeners of The Week Junior Show. My name is Joan Lennon, co-author of Talking History, 150 Years of Speakers and Speeches, which has been selected as Book of the Week in the current issue of the magazine. And I'm here to answer two very important questions. Firstly, do I like Marmite? No. Give me peanut butter any day of the week. Secondly, what was my favourite book growing up? So hard to choose just one, but I think I'll go for Mark of the Horse Lord by Rosemary Sutcliffe.
Hello there, listeners of The Week Junior Show. My name is Joan Haig, and I'm one of the authors of Talking History, 150 Years of Speakers and Speeches. I wrote it with Joan Lennon, and it's illustrated by Andrew Ducci. And it's been selected as Book of the Week in the current issue of the magazine. I'm here to answer two very important questions. Firstly, do I like Marmite? Do I like Marmite? Of course I like Marmite. I love Marmite. Who doesn't love Marmite? Marmite is brilliant when it's smashed into toast, and it's even better if you take a teaspoonful of it, pop it in a mug, top the mug up with warm water, and you have a delicious, nutritious drink. Absolutely love it. Secondly, what was my favourite book growing up? There were lots of books that I loved when I was growing up. The one I'm going to recommend to you today is A Picture Book for All Ages by Daniel M. Pinkwater, and it's called The Big Orange Splot, and it's full of colour and it's full of joy.
Okay, so it's time for the big debate. And this week, we're asking if all exams should be typed rather than written. Who can tell me a bit more?
I can. A headmaster at a school in England said all A-level and GCSE exams should be typed because writing by hand is too tiring for students. Currently, students with special learning needs or disabilities are allowed to use laptops in exams. School inspectors have said that handwriting standards have fallen across all age groups during lockdown. This might be because students learning remotely use keyboards, not pens. In another country, Finland, joined-up handwriting lessons have been dropped in favour of teaching students how to type. Some say schools should embrace modern life, but others want to protect handwriting because they see it as a vital skill. So what do you think? Should all exams be typed?
Okay, so this is going to be Hugh versus Michael. As usual, you both should know by now. You've got a minute per argument. Hugh is going to go first. He is arguing why they should be typed rather than written. So Hugh, whenever you are ready, take it away.
Okay, yeah, writing is annoying. It's often sore when you've been doing it for ages, and then the end result is illegible. Pencils break, pens run out of ink. When I was at school, often a lesson was just taking notes. The teacher would write with chalk on the board, and we would sit and scribble it all down in our jotters, and then go on to the next lesson, do the exact same thing. Typing is a skill for the present as well as the future. When I was at university even, which is a long, long time ago, we had to take handwritten notes, as much in the same way as school, really. But now students and teachers share links with each other. They copy and paste text. They write straight onto their laptops when they sit in the lecture theatres. So people should learn to touch type in primary school. Embarrassingly for me, I still type with one finger in each hand, even if it's occasionally quite fast. But I mean, the fact is, it's just not good enough. And this is changing technology. In 1440, Gutenberg invented the printing press, and it revolutionized publishing. People started reading. We had books. We had printed newspapers. That's what happened. And this is just another kind of type of change like that. Handwriting used to be the easiest and quickest way to communicate, but now it's not.
All right. Well, I'm going to say that was a slightly over a minute, but it was a good argument. And also referencing the Gutenberg printing press, crikey. Michael, whenever you're ready, you have a minute. Go for it.
So being able to write well is a very important life skill. And even if people aren't writing by hand as much as they're used to, there's still moments where you are going to need to write by hand to fill in important forms, for example. And as Kay was saying earlier, school inspectors are noticing how people's handwriting is already getting worse. So getting rid of handwritten tests would just make people's handwriting even worse. It wouldn't help people to improve. And although adults may do most of their work on computers, a lot of schoolwork is still done by hand. So therefore, handwritten tests would be appropriate. And in fact, a lot of studies have shown that people learn more and retain more information when they write something down by hand, as opposed to when they type it on a keyboard or a computer. So if we want to remember these things and remember this information and learn about it, which is the kind of the whole point of going to school and taking these tests, then doing them by hand is still the way to go.
Excellent stuff. Now, I'm just thinking out loud. I wonder whether it would be also easier to cheat if things are typed. I don't know. I'm just thinking. Maybe our listeners will have an opinion on that. Kay, what do you reckon?
I think, you know, some children might want to type their exams, but maybe there should be a bit of choice allowed.
Okay, Kay's being very diplomatic there. So listeners, let us know what you think by responding to the poll at theweekjunior.co.uk/polls or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk with a video clip explaining what side of the debate you support and why. Then we might play your voice out next week on the podcast. So last week, we asked if COVID vaccine recipes should be shared by the companies that develop them. And 68% of you thought they should be shared so that all the countries can have them.
One Pop Jam user sent us a message saying yes, because the whole world needs to know so their country will make the vaccines to stop their people from getting it as well.
Reader Victor was also keen to see them shared. Here's what he told us.
I think we should share the vaccine recipe because if we just let the rich people give it to the poor people, some rich people might not even bother to do it anyway, and they might be selfish.
However, Zoe disagreed and sent us this message.
Hi, I'm Zoe and I come from Austria. I don't think that the COVID vaccine recipe should be shared with poorer countries, because some scientists put a lot of hard work into it, and otherwise it would not show how much a value the vaccine has, and how many people it has actually saved from serious illness. But I do think it's a good idea to share our vaccines with other countries, as it might help them in their conditions, and it might help us, as there might not be so many new variants where if they don't have any vaccines there, and then it could get better, and hopefully the pandemic will be over soon.
So remember, this is your chance to get involved. Grab a grown-up and record a video telling us what you think of this week's debate. Then send it in to us at hello@theweekjunior.co.uk, and we could play it out on next week's show. So before we go, we have to reveal our real or rubbish story. Michael, can you remind me what it was, please?
I can. So this was the story that a machine malfunction at a factory in Canada caused soybean husks to fall from the sky just like snowfall.
Now, these are going to have to be big kind of explosions, aren't they? Because if they're falling from the sky, they'll have to like really erupt into the air and then kind of slowly come down. And it's going to have to be quite a big malfunction. But I think, I mean, the husks are the bit you don't want. Clearly, they were just there in a kind of a room, a chamber, ready to be gotten rid of. And it just didn't happen in time. I'm going to say the story is real. I'm going to say there's been some crazy outbreak of husks in this area in Canada. And I'm going to say, yes, this is real.
Drum roll, please. It's real.
Yes!
There's no tricks here, no trying to get you on a technicality with different type of beans. It really happened. There was an accident at the factory. And in fact, they even gave a voucher to someone to get their car cleaned because their car had been particularly affected by this snowfall.
And you know what, Michael? I've started making a list each week now of whether I get one wrong or right here. And finally, I can put a tick in the correct column for me. First time this year.
Maybe so, next week, two in a row, and then you can go for the hat trick the week after that.
Imagine a little... Oh, goodness, I daren't dream about it, Michael. It seems too far away from me. Well, that is it for the Week Junior Show this week. So it is goodbye to Hugh.
Bye.
To Kay.
Bye.
And Michael.
Goodbye.
Drop us a comment on PopJam at The Week Junior or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk. And don't forget to rate, review and subscribe or follow us wherever it is you get your podcasts. Bye!
If you want to get your hands on a copy of The Week Junior magazine, we're offering a 6-week free trial. To get yours, head over to dennismags.co.uk/theweekjunior and use the code PODCAST.